Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.
Kara seemed very underwhelmed by what was probably our best break ever.
I look up and I'm like, we nailed it.
Kara's literally like,
that was a right, massively
amazing. I'm doing a million things right now, guys.
Like nothing at all. No reaction. We both look over there looking for some affirmation.
We're like,
and we get nothing.
These little kids looking at our parent and we're like, mommy, we did it. And she's like,
it took us a year to get that done on the previous podcast. We nailed it day one.
And that was after we totally blew the last one.
Yeah, exactly. So,
hi, I'm Alan Austin.
And I'm Patrick Hamilton.
And this is WVIA Pop Shop, where what happens on the screen becomes the conversation in the real world.
For those of you that were fans of the previous podcast that ran on WVIA Radio and are wondering why it took us so long to come back, let's just say it took longer than we thought to get us camera ready.
Until literally right before the show, it turns out. So the show, it might look a little bit different, but we promise. No, we don't promise. We guarantee all the same fun, all the same thoughtfulness, and little moments of mayhem.
And WVIA Pop Shop is supported by our friends at the F.M. Kirby Center, and we'll hear from them in just a bit.
But before we do, we ought to actually introduce the topic of the day, which might, well, it ought to be clear enough, I suppose, if people can now actually see the show.
They can decipher the clues around the studio.
We are
talking, might be able to tell.
You may know, Patrick, but others may not, that there's a new Star Wars film.
There is.
In theaters. It's called The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Mm-hmm.
And it really provoked a fundamental question for me.
Mm-hmm.
Do we really, and I mean really, need yet another Star Wars movie?
Well, Disney seems to feel we did.
Yeah.
By and large, because I've seen a couple interviews with Favreau, the director, where he basically said Disney came to him with the idea that it's going to be 7 years since the last Star Wars film was in a theater, and they seem to feel it really important that we get a Star Wars film into theaters.
That's an odd argument to make a film, but
yes.
Okay. So
yeah.
Disney says we need it.
Yes. Audiences, on the other hand, maybe not so much.
Ooh, do we have numbers?
I do have numbers. Who doesn't love numbers?
Well.
But yeah, so it's opening weekend. It came in with the worst opening weekend of any Star Wars film so far.
So that's a bad start, but maybe things got better, right?
No. It actually had a really bad second week with the box office dropping around 70%, which a average box office drop is like 50 to 55%. So
that's not so good.
Yeah, audiences don't seem to really have felt the same need that Disney had.
Yeah. So I will say, when I went to see the movie in an unnamed theater, that was very much the experience in the theater in terms of, it was about 2/3 full, I would say. The film ended. There was some applause, light applause. As I walked out, there was a 5-year-old kid. He was talking to his parents really animatedly. He clearly enjoyed the film. But I made a huge mistake. I bought the seat in the back row, and I had 3 seats empty next to me. Perfect viewing experience.
Yeah.
As the lights come down.
Oh, no.
3 tween boys.
Oh, no.
Come trudging up. And I'm like, oh, they're going to sit next to me.
Mm-hmm.
They sit next to me. They had on more cologne than I have ever smelled on anybody in my life. It was like I was at a club with like the cast from Jersey Shore. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, my experience, I didn't have people decked out in a cologne, but there were a bunch of people that had like cardboard Yoda ears. I did not have them. I'm assuming Cinemark was sending them out.
Better. But the cologne story gets worse. Mm. They discovered that there's a tiny little space between the back of the seats and the actual wall in the theater.
Oh, behind you.
Yes. So by the time the movie's 5 minutes in, they've discovered they can climb over the back of the seats. They're laughing. They're having a great time.
How old were these kids?
They must have been about 10.
Oh, so, okay. You said tweens.
Well, 8 to 12 is a tween, I think. So they left. Thank God. I thought I was going to fight with a pack of tweens. And didn't come back until the last 5 minutes, and they just looked at their phones. So again, like, when we say, do we need a different or a new Star Wars movie, I guess it depends on the audience.
That or it depends on the movie, because at least this one doesn't seem to be exciting people.
No, that is for sure. Speaking of the movie, maybe a little background would help if anybody has been, like, I don't know, living under a rock and doesn't know what The Mandalorian and Grogu is about. Because it's a very deceptively nuanced title.
It's about The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Yes.
Who, of course, are spinning off from the Disney Plus series, The Mandalorian, that has run for 3 seasons. It's taking place, obviously, within the larger Star Wars universe, set sometime after the end of Return of the Jedi and the fall of the Empire, but before The Force Awakens and the sequel trilogy.
And so the cast is also drawn, I guess, from the series, which I never watched. So
no, you did watch season one.
Oh, I did.
We had a whole conversation about season one.
We did a show on The Mandalorian that somebody could probably dig out of the archives somewhere. Mm. I guess it was pretty forgettable, given that I literally don't remember it.
Well, maybe for you.
Yeah. So they've brought back Pedro Pascal, who is obviously sort of the omnipresent Pedro Pascal. Kara, since we need to get Kara on camera a little bit here, as we're making a list of stars to bring on. We talked about Pascal at least twice last season,
right?
Materialists.
That is a good choice.
The Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk about him in The Mandalorian and Grogu.
And he's practically everywhere. I think he could get here.
I think that he would be happy to do it. So he stars as the Mandalorian. Just as a quick note to people who don't know as much about Star Wars as I do.
Mm-hmm.
So he plays the Mandalorian, but that's not Boba Fett. Boba Fett was a Mandalorian.
He is
the Mandalorian.
In the sense of he is the one that the title is referring to, but he is also a Mandalorian. Mandalore is a planet within the Star Wars universe.
I totally know that.
The people that come from that are Mandalorians. There are a lot of them running around.
I don't understand why you're talking to me like I don't understand.
I know.
These bases.
Yes. I mean, the fact you couldn't remember. I'm probably judging too much from the fact you couldn't remember you'd seen season one. And that's assuming a certain base level of knowledge.
Or the dinner we had last week, where it took me a minute to catch back up. Yeah. So it also stars Jeremy Allen White.
Yes.
From The Bear, probably most famously. He is voicing Rada the Hutt.
Yes.
2 quick points here. It's interesting that being a member of the Hutt family is probably better than being a member of Carmi's family. Like if you were going to judge families that you wanted to be a part of, I think you'd probably go for the Hutts.
Yes, I totally understood that reference to The Bear because I have seen The Bear.
You've seen none of
the And thus I understand that reference.
Also, and this is true, you know what I learned for the first time from The Mandalorian? Because I can learn from this movie. I always thought the Hutt was like a nickname for Jabba. No. I did not realize that it was a family name. I thought they called him Jabba the Hutt.
You realize
because he was as big as a Hutt.
No, the language they speak is Huttese.
No, I don't. I obviously don't know what language
is.
They
are Hutts. That is their species.
But I thought they were big as a Hutt until literally I went to this movie.
So you thought his name was Jabba T. Hutt, is basically like the was his middle name. And he is Jabba T. Hutt.
No, I thought it was more like a nickname, you know, that you would give like, you know, Patrick the Brilliant.
Or something. I do like that.
Yeah.
That works.
So Sigourney Weaver comes back.
She does.
A big sci-fi franchise. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different, I would say, than
it's not
the
quite
alien,
the alien franchise.
And weirdly enough, Martin Scorsese.
Don't get me started on that.
not a fan.
I'm very upset with it. Well, after his criticisms of the MCU movies as being basically like a roller coaster ride and not cinema, him showing up in Star Wars, which of course is true cinema and not a roller coaster ride as well, certainly didn't seem hypocritical at all.
No, somebody's hypocrisy meter has been...
Not that I have strong feelings about him being in the
film. Has been activated. So I think one of the interesting things that will sort of drive the conversation as we move forward is the fact, I don't know this universe like you know this universe. Okay. I think it would be fair to say that you're a fan.
I'm a fan.
And I am somebody who goes to see the movies.
Reluctantly, yes.
Depending on the movie. Some more reluctantly than others.
Sorry, I thought you were going.
No, I have any more. No.
I thought you had more going there.
No, so and it might be a way for us to start the next segment then would be to ask, or as we move to the next segment, we should tease the question that we're going to pursue.
Yes. Which is?
I was trying to trade it to you.
Yeah, but
so we want to talk about the film as a film.
As a film. Okay, that's
itself,
where we're going.
Itself, right? I think that's the schedule we had.
This is going to be so good.
Podcasting
gold. It seemed like you were setting me up that you had questions you wanted to ask me about the film.
No, I was setting you up.
I did not realize we were going
to
that
question.
That was not clear to me.
The film.
This is smooth.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, we'll talk about how the visual and narrative elements either help or hinder the film.
We absolutely will, with a conversation that I think will help us start to understand maybe whether we ought to be popping or shopping on this film. So as you were just asking, Patrick, we might think about this film in terms of its visual and narrative qualities.
That sounds like a brilliant idea.
In the way in which they either elevate what the film might do or limit what the film can be.
Yes.
I know you're a narrative guy. Do you want to start with the narrative?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say that, so I'm of two minds about the narrative, the story in Mandalorian and Grogu, in that the story itself that it tells is perfectly fine.
Did you just drop a perfectly fine?
Did.
That is not a good start for
it's
this film.
It's pretty self-contained.
Long-term, just so long-term listeners know
yes.
that when you say
viewers,
perfectly fine,
mm-hmm.
you mean it was barely passable.
No. That's probably
I'm
a little bit
just translating Hamilton
yeah,
to
Yeah, that's how you translate
speak.
It. That okay. is not necessarily
so,
my
So I'm
intent.
Sorry, it was perfectly fine. It was self-contained.
Self-contained, but I also don't really feel like it was that important a story. Like, there weren't any real stakes that I ever felt in
yes.
terms of what was going on with the characters. And it felt very much like, you know, you could take this film out of The Mandalorian and kind of the larger Star Wars franchise, and it really wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah, talking about stakes, one of the problems I had with the film, stepping in as somebody who hasn't watched mm-hmm. season 2 and season 3 of The Mandalorian,
yeah.
is there, I had no real sense of character motivation
yeah.
for any of these characters. Like, The Mandalorian is good because I guess he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And if he's a good guy, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Why does he keep bringing little Grogu to his job? It's like bringing your kid to work day, but you're a mobster who's going to like rub out people, you know? Like, it's just, it seems like really bad parenting for the guy that's the good guy in this film.
So, number one.
Yes.
Again, I'm not well-versed in the lore of this aspect of Star Wars.
But the lore of parenting?
The lore of Mandalorians.
Okay.
But generally yeah. speaking, they don't strike me as terribly good parents.
That's
because largely from a very young age, they are kind of trained to be these kind of warrior people. There's a scene in camera for season 2 or 3 where literally baby Grogu and another young Mandalorian are like shooting paintballs at each other. It's kind
yeah.
of like they're training to be, you know, Mandalorians are kind of learning the creed. So part of why he brings him along is because he is sort of mentoring him. He's, you know, he's adopted Grogu at this point as part of his clan.
Yeah, it seems
and
abusive,
so he is kind of
honestly.
Molding him into kind of what a Mandalorian is meant to be.
But imagine being raised by a parent like whose face you never see.
Oh, he's seen the face.
Oh, that's right, because you're not allowed to. But somehow Favreau always manages to create a scenario where the helmet has to come off.
Well, there's well,
little contrived, right?
There's that, but there's also two ways that you can
oh boy
you can fix that.
I have
you can either kill the person, which yeah. that clearly that's one option that's made very
no,
clear in the film.
Yeah, he says it, but no spoilers.
Yeah. The other option is that you can bathe in the sacred waters of Mandalore, which he had done in a previous season.
You can bathe.
Yeah.
You can just bathe away your masklessness?
There's like a yeah,
that seems
well,
like
it's like a
fairy.
It's kind of like a baptism in that you are purified and thus you can put your helmet back on and you're good.
So you get rebaptized.
Yeah.
I feel as if you get to the end of a film, you've written a script, you film it, mm-hmm. you show it to audiences, and audiences give you feedback on a card.
Mm-hmm.
And the card says the best developed character in this film
mm-hmm.
is Rada the Hutt. Like the mm-hmm. Hutt has the and it's not a good one, let me be
yeah.
clear. But at least he has an explanation
mm-hmm.
for why he acts like he acts. I think
yes.
if Rada is your best developed character,
mm-hmm.
I think you have a problem.
Part of that, though, is that Rada, I think, gives the exact same speech about not wanting to be his father within 5 minutes of each other, which
well,
is another part where the writing got a little bit dodgy for me. But I'm glad you brought up Rada.
I want to be clear that I didn't say it was good.
Yeah, no,
I'm just
I
saying it was the best that was done
well,
in the entire movie.
This is not Rada's first appearance. He was in the
You've
original Star
me.
Wars Clone Wars movie that led into the Clone Wars series, where the whole plot of that movie is Anakin and Ahsoka, who also debuted as his Padawan Jedi trainee, have
Fair
to
just...
rescue Rada from being kidnapped, but his name is Stinky.
So they nicknamed him Stinky?
Yeah, his name is... So if
okay.
you remember in the movie,
if
the
Kara...
scene where they show the young picture of Rada?
Yeah.
That's from the Clone Wars movie.
If
which is pretty
just
much...
I can't help you. I cannot help
because
you.
It is,
I know you're
I am universally reviled as
in
the
Huddy
worst
and
Star Wars
lore
movie.
Right now.
Yeah, the Clone Wars is a terrible movie. But I think
yeah.
what Dave Filoni, producer on the film and kind of the head guru
yeah.
of Star Wars, I think he's trying to do with Rada what he did with Ahsoka, which is that she debuted in that movie as well.
Yeah.
Very much kind of your typical kid sidekick that's all of a sudden introduced that nobody likes.
Yeah.
And they've since redeemed her. I think he's kind of trying to do that with Stinky.
I he's definitely trying to do it with Stinky, but it is so heavy-handedly done, and it's mostly done just through exposition.
Yes, it's a lot telling, not showing.
Well, and as I remember The Mandalorian as a series, it was very episodic, right? But it was episodic in its nature, and this film is so episodic in some ways it struggles. And for me, that's reinforced by the visual of this film. So I'll talk about, just to give you one example, the very opening, where we open to this, Kara, and a big action scene where the Mandalorian, and for whatever reason he's bringing Grogu to work with him, are tracking down an old remnant of the Empire, and they're capturing an old bad guy.
An Imperial warlord would be the technical term for who they're tracking down.
Yes, I'm sure there's a technical term for it. I am confident I'm not going to use it. The visual works really well there, by the way. So, but as they do, the bad guy is running away in those really big machines with the tall legs.
The AT-ATs.
That's what you... I was just checking to make sure Patrick knew.
Right. You know that these were called AT-ATs. You are pretending not to know that they're AT-ATs. You 100% know that they are AT-ATs.
Absolutely not. I appreciate the...
You and I are of the Empire generation. You cannot sit there and tell me you do not know that they're called AT-ATs.
But when I saw the AT-ATs when I was a kid, totally different experience from watching them this time. Yeah. Insofar as it was so obviously CGI'd, that the film had no sort of like tactile quality to it for me. It didn't feel like when they go over, you don't feel the impact. When they explode, you don't feel the explosion.
Yeah.
I just... Like, from the very beginning, when I watched the film, and it probably put me in the wrong mood for the rest of the film, that opening that's supposed to be this, like, massive action sequence, it felt to me like TV being broadcast on the big screen.
Oh, see, I liked the opening.
Yeah.
I felt the rest of the film wasn't great visually, because it got very dark and muddy and kind of grayed out.
Like, you may know how I feel about dark films.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and also just, it kind of had, kind of like the MCU films these days, all kind of have a sameness to them.
Yeah.
There was an element of that in kind of the latter stages of Mandalorian.
I get that one of the things that's great about Star Wars is meeting all these new characters.
Yeah.
The worlds didn't feel real to me, except for the little mouse rat guys that drive the tiny little spaceship.
Oh, the Anzellans.
The Anzellans. So... They really appealed to me.
Really?
At first.
How do you like them? And that you hate all cute things.
I don't know if they were cute, but they were funny.
Oh, they're clearly meant to be cute.
Probably they are. But 100%. They were also real puppets.
Yes,
they
are.
And I think they felt thus more...
As is Grogu.
More real than a lot of the rest of it.
Yeah, I can't stand the Anzellans. They drive me nuts.
Well, so as this conversation is pushing us along, I think why do we continue to go to Star Wars movies?
Yeah.
And why do they matter to us? That's probably the next question that we've been pushed to. Yes. But before we can talk about that, we have to go to a break.
Yes, and we'll be hearing from our friends at the Kirby Center.
Support for Pop Shop comes from the FM Kirby Center in downtown Wilkes-Barre, bringing live entertainment, film, comedy, and special events to northeastern Pennsylvania. The Kirby's June lineup continues on June 11th with Grammy-winning guitarist and songwriter Gary Clark Jr. On June 17th, attorney and television personality Jarrett Ferrantino brings True Crime Night to the stage. Comedy fans can catch Daniel Tosh on June 21st. Families can enjoy Finding Nemo on June 23rd and Ratatouille on June 30th as part of the Honesdale National Bank's Big Screen Summer Series, where children 12 and under are admitted free. The month also includes a screening of the critically acclaimed Agnes on June 24th. From acclaimed musicians and stand-up comedy to family movies and special events, there's something for everyone this month at the Kirby. Learn more and purchase tickets at kirbycenter.org.
Thanks so much to the Kirby Center.
Yep, there's a lot going on there. And from this point on, spoilers may be ahead.
That's right. And if you have time and you're enjoying it, you can always subscribe to the podcast. Or if you want to leave a review, ask us some questions, follow up. If you have more questions about Star Wars lore.
Oh, yes. We can always talk about that.
Address that to Patrick.
We.
Some of us will handle some questions.
I'm being broadly inclusive.
I appreciate that. So for the second main part of the show, we want to talk about sort of the current state of the Star Wars franchise. But as you noted to me, this is like we're 1 year away from the 50th anniversary of Star Wars entering the zeitgeist. And so I'm really curious to have a conversation about why it is that Star Wars continues to matter so much to Americans.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling about the current state of the Star Wars franchise? Oh, man. If this is your reaction.
Not great.
It's not good for Star
Wars. Well, kind of going back to the earlier part of the conversation, we were kind of talking about the story not really feeling all that significant.
Right.
What significance there is, it feels like there's a lot of, the show kind of referencing other things within Star Wars.
Right.
It's picking up on threads from, obviously, the Mandalorian series. It's picking up on threads from the Book of Boba Fett. It's tying back into Clone Wars and Rebels and others sort of the animated series and things like that. That, whereas Star Wars in the past used to feel more about something larger than just Star Wars, it feels like Star Wars now is about Star Wars. And if you
interesting.
Absent knowing the lore, I don't know that this film really gives you a reason for it to exist.
And I think that as you're talking, it reminds me of the MCU in some ways. To fully enjoy, to maximize your Mandalorian and Grogu experience, there's a lot of homework.
There is.
There's a lot of reading you have to do before you get there. I am so fearful of Doomsday when it comes out because I've dumped all of that Marvel stuff from my brain.
It's just, as have I.
Now I have to go. Now I have to go back and relearn all of it.
You do like a massive 21 film marathon. Doesn't that sound fun?
It seems to me that
plus all the TV shows.
Right. If we waited 7 years for the next Star Wars film, and this is the next Star Wars film, it doesn't seem like you get the payoff.
Well, I think that's part of it.
Perfectly fun film.
Perfectly fun. Yeah.
But it's not a classic Star Wars film, I don't think.
No, it doesn't. And again, story-wise, there's nothing really momentous to what goes on in The Mandalorian and Grogu that makes it any difference, as you kind of already alluded to, from what you would see on the streaming series.
It feels small.
For the show making a jump to the big screen, it should be telling a bigger story. And this movie really feels like an arc for a season with all the filler episodes cut out.
Right.
Do we know why they decided to make it a film?
Well, from what I saw, I've seen interviews with Favreau where he basically said they were already working on season 4 of Mandalorian, which was going to lead into season 2 of Ahsoka and kind of tying into the larger plot he has going on there. And then they came with him with and this was during COVID when everything got disrupted. By the time we get things running again, it's going to have been 7 years since the last Star Wars movie. What do you think about making a Mandalorian and Grogu film? And so they scuttled what they were doing and came up with this story. But in a lot of ways, this was not the story they were planning to tell. With Mandalorian and Grogu. And so I think that's part of why it feels kind of inconsequential.
Because it was a rush job.
You've got to assume they're going to go back to what they were planning to do. And they just kind of have to tell this one little episode that kind of leaves everyone where they were to begin with.
It's such an odd one. We've warned for spoilers, obviously.
Yeah.
That twice the Mandalorian, who is allegedly the greatest bounty hunter in the galaxy, is captured.
Yeah.
It's a weird one.
Well, he's captured by Enbo, who's the bounty hunter with the big metal head.
Helmet. And the hat that he uses like a shield. Yes. They're clearly trying to create another bounty hunter that they can
about. He also appeared in Clone Wars in various series as an animated character.
Oh, now I remember
him.
No, I didn't.
No, you don't. You didn't watch the animated
stuff. But the crazy thing about Star Wars is, despite all of the complaints that we've lodged against this film, we're still talking about this film.
Yes.
And so why does it matter? Can I pitch you a historical answer to that question?
Sure.
I also have economic and cultural ideas, but we can trade ideas back and forth. So Star Wars debuts in 1977.
Yes.
So the year after the Bicentennial.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can draw parallels between the Bicentennial and the 250th that we're about to celebrate in this country.
Yes.
That Americans tried to celebrate the Bicentennial, but by 1976, they're beset by all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
Watergate and growing political cynicism. The war in Vietnam has been lost, and the post-war economic boom is over.
Mm-hmm.
Oil shock, stagflation. I think when Americans went to the movies in 1977, for many of them, it was the first time they thought of their country as being limited in some way, that for many of them, most of their lives, they imagined sort of this control in the world and this boundless economic growth. Not that individuals, of course, weren't limited, but that it seemed like from the, almost the founding of the United States, it was like this boundless kind of potential. Mm-hmm. And it's gone. And I wonder if Star Wars was helping people kind of wrestle with that. And in part because I think those are the same questions we're wrestling with today. That we live in sort of that post-boom era right now.
When you say wrestle.
Yeah.
Because I'm, because for me, it seems to me, thinking back to Star Wars in 1977, I can sort of see it in two ways. I can see it on the one hand that Star Wars as kind of a sci-fi film might be providing a kind of escape.
Yes, from I think there's an escapism.
Those problems.
Yeah.
And then I also think is that this is the other, this is one of the things that, that I thought about in terms of this question is that, you know, Star Wars very much from the get-go has tied into particular American myths and narratives, particularly playing on concepts of the Western.
Yes, so individualism.
Know, individualism, you know, the you know, space as the next frontier and things like that.
Kind of an American goodness, like that in, that in conquering the frontier, there's some kind of American good that's being spread more broadly.
Yeah, I can sort of see that. And so when we get, and so with Mandalorian and Grogu, it's very easy to see some of, I mean, some of that Western imagery as well. I mean, 100%. Mandalorian is basically the gunslinger, cowboy type. The outsider who comes in and you know, works outside of the system, but in, also kind of for the system.
In season one, too, there's one episode that's precisely a Western, where he trains the horse to travel across the desert.
Yeah, so there's lots of stuff like that. But for me, with Mandalorian, it feels sort of, at best, nostalgic or just kind of surface level. Like, they're not, it's not, there's not kind of that mythic element as much in Mandalorian as there was with like the original Star Wars in particular.
Yeah, but I think the idea of escapism is really powerful. That we like to imagine ourselves as Luke and Leia and Han, right? That we're all these like individual good people who are going to rebuild the world or make it better somehow. But it's also, it strikes me in the film that you never really know quite what the Rebel Alliance stands for.
In the original film.
Yeah, well, all of it. Most of it, right? Like that, we know the Empire's bad.
Well, I mean, that I would say, I mean, it was pretty clear in the early films, you know, rebels good, Empire bad.
Oh no, good and bad.
That's gotten much more complicated.
But what do the rebels actually build? Like, what do they stand for once the Empire is?
Well, that's one of the interesting things about where we are in the franchise, because obviously, you know, Mandalorian is taking place between the end of the Empire, we've got the birth of the New Republic.
Right.
But we also know that the First Order is coming.
Right.
And thus kind of the New Republic is going to fail.
Right.
And there is something interesting to be done in that space about kind of like, what do they build? Can they build anything? Or are, you know, are they kind of doomed? But I don't know that Mandalorian and Grogu is really pursuing those questions.
Unless the rebel idea of what you do after the revolution is just police.
Yeah.
Right? That we're just going to police. Yeah. So you mentioned nostalgia. Mm-hmm. Can I pitch one more? Because I know we're going to run out of time here quickly. Just gross capitalism. The, from the beginning, it was marketed with unbelievable, like, slickness.
Like Mandalorian and Grogu or Star Wars?
Star Wars. Okay. So that when you were a kid and you got your first Darth Vader little figure, and he had that little lightsaber hidden in his arm, and you could kind of, like, push it up and it would... like
love the little lightsaber.
Like, it was just... it was... so well marketed.
So I liked it better when they eventually became separate little sticks that you could put in their hands.
Well, of course you did, but as a kid, like,
but yeah,
it is just is so well marketed.
That,
yeah, it's just capitalism colonizing our culture.
Yeah, it is one of the interesting things going back to sort of the box office of the film. One of the arguments about, well, it doesn't really matter what the box office for Mandalorian and Grogu is doing because they're going to make back their money on merchandising.
Yeah, and that is maybe the ultimate comment about the culture that we live in today. So on that sad note, I think there's nothing left to do but move to the segment that people most love but we most often forget. Pop or shop.
That's right.
So Kara, you cannot pop nor shop.
Do we need to explain what pop or shop means? We probably should explain what that means.
Well, because we're coming back to season two.
So pop means it's something that we think is great or really good. People should go see it.
Does that have to be great to pop, or can it just be like marginally good?
I think it needs to be something more than that to pop.
It can't be like a mild pop?
There are, yes, we have had mild pops in the past.
All right.
Shop means you should go see something else.
Do you ever think that we should like go to a grading scale since we're both college professors?
No, that gets too complex.
Create more nuance, though.
Pop plus, pop minus. There we go.
Wow.
Okay, you've created a whole new
shop
system
plus,
now.
Yeah. Shop minus. So there's your nuance there.
Boy, the shop minus.
Yeah, the shop minus is bad.
Megalopolis. I think it was a shop minus.
Oh, that
might
just
be. We weren't going to be talking about that ever again.
That might just be a zero.
But if anybody wanted to hear what we had to say about Megalopolis, they could find it.
They could find it, yes.
Pop shop bank, yep. Catalog for sure.
They could.
All right, so Kara can't pop or shop.
Okay.
I cannot.
You've given me a window that I'm going to take.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a pop minus.
Ooh.
Minus.
Oh. Okay, that is not the window I gave you.
Well, you know, I'm just adding a little. So here's the thing. I would say if you really love Star Wars, it's a perfectly fun film.
Okay.
If it's a rainy afternoon and there's nothing better to do. Once the Cologne boys left, I wasn't looking at my watch, right? It wasn't a situation where I was counting down
the
minutes.
Oh, the Cologne boys left during the film?
They left after, otherwise I would have had to fight three tweens, which is bad no matter what, Karen, because if I win, I'm a bully, and if I lose, I lost to a bunch
of
tweens.
You're a bully who lost.
Yeah,
right, exactly. The bully who loses. It's not a good one. Not a good look.
That's a bully minus.
So, yeah, a bully. Well, if I'm going to be a bully, I'd rather be a bully minus. Or if you have kids. This movie, a lot of what we've talked about, it's a very simple movie.
Yes.
And I think in that way, it would be a lot more fun for an 8-year-old than it was probably for me.
Yeah.
So I'll give it the classic pop minus.
It's not classic if we just invented it today.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So where are you at?
Yeah. So
are you gonna shop?
Do you remember?
If you shop, Star Wars is dead.
Do you remember
he's shopping, Karen.
Those like wafer cookies that you would buy that were like chocolate and vanilla and like strawberry?
I love those wafer cookies.
And you would have them and they were so good and then they would just like disappear and it's like you didn't eat anything?
When you ate them, would you peel off the top wafer?
So you
would get more of the filling?
That is kind of, that's wrong.
You peel off the top, you peel off the bottom and then you get the, because nobody wants the wafer, you're eating it for the middle.
I just ate the cookie.
I don't understand.
But going back to the Mandalorian,
Mandalorian
and Grogu is the wafer cookie of the Star Wars universe. In that,
but does that mean pop or shop? Because wafer cookies
are
wonderful.
It means if you are just looking for a fun film that doesn't require you to think much and can just entertain you on, say, a rainy day, then it's perfectly fun.
Just to be clear, Kara, for somebody who said that my pop minus minus. Was dodging something. Somebody still hasn't popped or
shopped.
That
is true.
That's right, because I would say for certain, under certain circumstances.
No, you don't. No, you can't contextualize the pop or shop.
I think I can.
You pop or you shop.
I think we need historical context for
pop
or
shop.
Pop or shop,
if you do this, I want to be clear to you. Pop or shop is dead.
I don't think so.
It's meaningless.
Yeah. I would.
Have you just killed pop or shop?
I don't think I have.
What?
But it's dead.
Yes. No, I don't think I have.
What will we do next week?
But I would say it's at best a mild pop.
A mild pop. That's where I started.
Yeah.
Until you gave me the pop minus option.
It's not really something I would say anyone needs to go see.
Yeah.
Even if you're a diehard Star Wars fan. I'm not sure. Again, the movie never really justifies its existence.
If we started with the idea of needing a Star Wars movie, I think we both agree we don't need this one.
Yeah.
But maybe the next one we'll need.
Yes.
Right? So anyway, thank you very much for joining us for this episode.
Yes, and thank you once again to our friends at the FM Kirby Center.
We couldn't do it without you. Next week, I just realized what we're talking about next week, because this does not feel promising.
Yes, no, we will be discussing the Masters of the Universe movie. Will this latest attempt at spinning off a toy franchise into a film be another Barbie? Or will this movie not have the power that it's hoping it has to attract audiences?
Always with the puns.
Yes, the puns are the best part of the show.
That's fun.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the FM Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.